Picture a Portuguese chronicler in the 1400s, quill in hand, crafting the first European defense of African slavery. His name was Zarata, and he faced a problem. How do you justify buying and selling human beings? His solution was elegant and devastating. Frame enslavement not as commerce, but as charity. Africans, he wrote, lived like beasts and benefited from Portuguese bondage. This wasn't just propaganda, it was the birth of a powerful idea that would echo through centuries. Before the first enslaved Africans set foot in Boston in 1638, before cotton fields stretched across the American South, racist ideas had already been carefully constructed to make the unthinkable seem inevitable. The uncomfortable truth? Racism didn't emerge from ignorance or hatred bubbling up from the masses. It was engineered from the top down, designed by powerful interests to justify policies that enriched them. Follow the racist ideas, and they don't lead to ignorant minds. They lead to profit margins and political power. Religious leaders constructed theological frameworks holding contradictory truths simultaneously. When Puritan minister Richard Mather arrived in New England in the 1630s, he brought Aristotle's philosophy of natural human hierarchy, placing Europeans at the top. His grandson, Cotton Mather, perfected this theological sleight of hand. Enslaved Africans possessed souls equal to whites, but bodies designed for bondage. You could save an African's soul on Sunday while selling their body on Monday without moral contradiction. During the Salem witch trials of 1692, witnesses described the devil identically, a little black-bearded man, a dark thing of considerable bigness. The equation was complete. Darkness meant evil, whiteness meant godliness. Cotton Mather learned smallpox inoculation from his enslaved man Onesimus, yet white doctors spread conspiracy theories that Africans were plotting mass murder. Even saving lives became racialized. Thomas Jefferson embodied America's original sin with breathtaking clarity. His earliest memory was being carried by an enslaved woman he called kind and gentle, associating slavery with comfort from the start. As a young lawyer, he argued, under the law of nature, all men are born free. Yet when penning the Declaration of Independence, he held nearly 200 human beings in bondage. His Notes on the State of Virginia became the most influential racist text in American history, shaping discourse for 50 years. Jefferson claimed he'd never find that a black had uttered a thought above the level of plain narration, dismissing Phyllis Wheatley's poetry as mere religious influence. The logic was circular. Ignore the skilled enslaved workers making his plantation self-sufficient, then cite black people's lack of achievement as proof of inferiority. He claimed black people were simultaneously more adventuresome, yet lacked forethought, felt love more intensely, but pain less acutely. These weren't ignorant musings. Jefferson corresponded with anti-racist thinkers like Count Constantine Volney, who argued black Egyptians originated civilization's foundational achievements. Jefferson knew better. He chose otherwise. David Walker's 1829 appeal sparked unprecedented black resistance, demanding immediate liberation and challenging Jefferson's racist legacy. Though he died of tuberculosis a year later, his ideas influenced Maria Stewart and William Lloyd Garrison, who founded the Liberator in 1831. Garrison embodied a striking contradiction, demanding immediate abolition while advocating gradual equality through uplift suasion, the notion that black self-improvement would diminish white prejudice. Frederick Douglass exposed this hypocrisy. After escaping slavery in 1841, he became a traveling speaker, but white abolitionists wanted him as symbol, not thinker. When he ventured into philosophy, they'd whisper, "Tell your story, Frederick," urging him to maintain plantation manner of speech. Meanwhile, Harriet Beecher Stowe's Uncle Tom's Cabin shifted public sentiment against slavery, but reinforced racist ideas about black docility and spiritual nature. The book that helped end slavery strengthened ideas that would haunt emancipation. Progress and prejudice intertwined like DNA strands. Emancipation should have been America's rebirth. Instead, it became a masterclass in how racist ideas evolve to justify new forms of oppression. Abraham Lincoln compared the Union to a shepherd protecting black sheep from Confederate wolves, erasing the truth enslaved people fought for their own freedom, then joined Union forces as liberators. President Andrew Johnson crushed these hopes on May 29, 1865, granting amnesty to Confederate officials and empowering Southern states to bar black voting and institute black codes. The 13th Amendment's exception allowing slavery as punishment for crime simply replaced the master with the law. Radical Republican Thaddeus Stevens proposed 40 acres for each freedman, but wealthy Republicans rejected it, claiming it would ruin the freedmen by teaching them they could acquire land without working. Men who inherited property claimed land redistribution would corrupt black work ethic. The 1896 Plessy v. Ferguson ruling legalized separate but equal, with Justice Brown claiming the Constitution couldn't put an inferior race upon the same plane as whites. Booker T. Washington's Atlanta Compromise urged black people to accept their place and prove their worth. W.E.B. Du Bois captured the psychological toll in the souls of black folk, describing double consciousness, the exhausting sensation of always looking at oneself through the eyes of others, forever measuring your humanity against someone else's prejudice. Ronald Reagan perfected racism without mentioning race. His campaign popularized the story of Linda Taylor, a black welfare queen he falsely claimed received $150,000 in benefits. The fiction worked, feeding white resentment while maintaining plausible deniability. Reagan slashed social programs and launched the war on drugs, which became a war on black communities. Between 1980 and 2000, the prison population quadrupled, not because crime increased, but because sentencing policies changed. Drug use rates were identical across races at 6.4%, and white youths were 32% more likely to sell drugs. Yet by 2000, blacks comprised 62.7% of drug offenders in state prisons. During the crack epidemic, 2/3 of users were white or Latino, but 84.5% of defendants convicted of crack possession were black. Racial profiling and concentrated policing created the false reality they claimed to address, branding black neighborhoods as dangerous versus safe white suburbs, affecting everything from housing values to political decisions. Obama's 2008 victory sparked premature claims that America had transcended race, though he won with 43% of white voters, identical to previous Democrats. The Great Recession hit black households twice as hard, yet pointing this out was called divisive. Then 2013 arrived. George Zimmerman's acquittal for killing Trayvon Martin inspired Alicia Garza to write Black Lives Matter. Patrice Cullors hashtagged it, Opal Tometi built an online platform, and hashtag Black Lives Matter became a movement led largely by young black women, revealing what history had been teaching. Self-sacrifice and uplift suasion have failed as anti-racist strategies. A fundamental myth persists that racism materially benefits most white people. While racist policies have generally benefited whites at black expense, a society of equal opportunity would actually benefit the vast majority of white Americans far more. Anti-racists don't need altruism. They need intelligent self-interest. Middle-income blacks benefit from challenging racism affecting poor blacks. Other minorities benefit from fighting anti-black racism. White Americans benefit from opposing racism that sustains other oppressions, like sexism and homophobia. Only super-rich, Protestant, heterosexual, non-immigrant white males need altruism to be anti-racist. Everyone else merely needs to recognize where their true interests lie. Racial discrimination will only be eliminated when those with power face effective protest, or when anti-racists seize power themselves. The most successful protests have been local efforts with clear demands and persistent pressure. Ultimately, racial justice will come when Americans gain the courage to fight for everyone's humanity, including their own.